Hey, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you happen to be. Welcome to Conversations on Retail. My name is Mike Grain, and we're going to do yet another series in our focus on on-shelf availability. And we're going to actually go back and combine a couple of topics together because on-shelf availability plays an important role in making sure you've got what the customer wants. But we have talked about RFID in food before, leveraging RFID technology to make sure you have the freshest product and delivered to your customer, number one. But number two, we've also talked about a concept that GS1 has called Sunrise 2027. And we're going to talk about how they actually potentially fit together in a big way. My guest is a returning to the scene of the crime, Jonathan Gregory. Jonathan, you want to unmute and give us a little bit of background about you and your history?
Hey, Mike, good to be with you here today. Yeah, it's great to be with you again. So a little bit of my history. Yes, I've been with GS1 US for about 5 years. And before that was deploying RFID solutions for 13 years in the aerospace and in the retail environments. Even before that, dealing with IT systems, the largest ERP system in the world at its time, deploying that out, dealing with shop floor labor collection and the like. So that's kind of the professional career. I am a dad, a father of four, so I like to throw in a dad joke here or there. Potentially some corny jokes on the way as well. So,
all right, I'm going to put you on the spot because I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question. Give us your hobby. What's your best hobby?
Oh, man. So the one that I like most, it's the most distinct, is winter hiking. I will take my son out into the Adirondacks or, some guys out, some buddies, and I will go out and try and survive for a couple of days in the woods in the deep snow. And it always makes me appreciate my couch for the whole rest of the year. So that's the biggest hobby. Yeah.
Is this the whole, you wear the shoes that look like tennis, tennis rackets?
Oh, yeah, and all that snow shoes and layered up and pitching a tent in the snow and all that jazz. Just can't beat it.
Okay, why? The obvious question is why? Because somebody else said, oh, I love to run marathons. I go, why? Why
would you because run 26 it's there. Miles? It takes you, talk about a vacation, Mike, right? It completely takes you out of the day. Day to day and puts you in a state of being, if you will. So I have to survive here. I have to focus on the moment.
Well, it's also you could bind those things. You could say, I love my son, but I'm going to take him out in the woods and leave him and see if I can make it back. And this is called survival training from dad.
Yeah, I wouldn't leave him, but it also forms certain bonds between people. Like when you suffer together, you never forget it, so it's a good time.
Oh my goodness. I've known you probably about 5 years and I never knew that about you. So I'm glad I asked about you.
Yeah.
Well, tell us so you've been at GS1 for 5 years. For those people who don't know, GS1 is what and why are they important to the industry? Help us understand a little bit more about what GS1 does.
Yeah, great question, Mike. So about 50 years ago, the UPC barcode was invented, right? And that was because long checkout lines and grocery stores. Well, somebody has to govern the standards and the data so that, brand A and brand B don't have the same barcode value on them. So you need a neutral third party. GS1 US is a, or GS1 is a not-for-profit organization that ensures that common standards are applied. So we govern a whole system of in industry commerce standards. So this spans from identifying products or locations or business entities or shipments to the realm of capturing that data. So the standards for barcode symbologies that relate, certainly the RFID standards. So GS1 maintains the technical standards that undergird and power the RFID technology. And then the share, so ID capture, and then the sharing of that data. So GS1 maintains the standards for EDI, so purchase orders, advanced shipment notices, things like that. The GDSN is a global data synchronization network that provides product attributal data. So it's a way of getting to a common picture and understanding of product attributes. What's the size, dimension, that information, net weight, product image, that type of information. Mm-hmm. That's really necessary for industry commerce. So the other thing I wanted to mention about GS1 is that it is a global federated network. So I'm with GS1 US, the United States instance, if you will, of GS1, but there's a GS1 China, Japan, Brazil, et cetera. There are over, I believe, 116 country-specific GS1 organizations. They're all not-for-profit or government agencies. And so what this does is it gives you a global industry commerce infrastructure, if you will, that ensures kind of these basic elements of business vocabulary, if you will, are available and leveraged. And every day, over 10 billion GS1 barcodes are scanned. So pretty intense.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I've been around the industry to know the pain of not leveraging GS1 standards. When I first started, I was with Procter and Gamble. When I first started working with Walmart, we wanted to do this thing called continuous replenishment, where literally we would get orders and DC levels of inventory, and we'd build the orders for Walmart and actually ship the product. Well, we did it in a proprietary standard because there was no standard for that at that time. So I'm not going to tell you how old that was. It was a long time ago. And they wanted to run to reapply for Target and Kroger. And Target and Kroger wanted it in a different format. And we quickly said, if we do this for 50 customers, we've got 50 different ways of getting orders and invoice information into our system. Stop, we got to do something else. So it was right about the time that GS1 came up with, hey, we are going to create EDI, electronic data interchange standards for sharing product information and invoicing and purchase order, et cetera. Now everybody's on one standard. You don't have to have a different set of standards to work with different retailers, which is incredible. So thank you for your hard work. It's sort of like the DNA of the body. When it works, you take it for granted, and when it doesn't work, you get really, really sick, and you don't know why. And that's, but if you don't have the standards and the rules, everybody kind of plays by their own rules, and that becomes very costly, right?
Yeah, it works best when you don't really have to think about it, right? Yeah,
Exactly.
it's just there
Exactly.
in the background. Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure. Yeah.
So the focus of this channel is really on-shelf availability, and we're going to talk a little bit about on-shelf availability and specifically food freshness. I think you've got some pretty interesting concept about some of the things that are going on. Forget about GS1 for a second, just the challenges of food and food waste, et cetera. It's a big deal. We throw away a lot of product that we probably don't want to throw away. So walk us through what some of the opportunities in the food waste area are.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. So, every year, according to the United Nations Environment Program report from the year 2021, about a billion, over a billion metric tons of food is wasted. And
Wow.
actually, the report breaks it down by how much of that waste is contributed by food service and how much by retail. So, when you combine that, you see that 363 million tons of food is wasted from retail and food service alone every year, which is pretty incredible. So there's a huge opportunity, I mean, in the trillions, if you will, opportunity to solve this problem with standardization and technology, right? In order to you just reduce that and you have a huge win. Everybody wins when you reduce food waste. There's so many kind of implications and ripple effects of that waste, be it environmental impact and costs to businesses, impacts on customer safety, food safety and whatnot. I was just thinking when I was traveling back, I was in an airport about a month ago, and it wasn't a quick serve restaurant. It was a kind of a sit down place, but I'd ordered a yogurt, and it was like one of those granola yogurt kind of combo things. And it had a little like expiration, like a sticker on it. And the sticker had been scratched right at the month. And it was old. It was a month old.
Oh
Uh,
my
but but
gosh.
somebody had kind of scratched the top of the sticker. And I was like, this is, I mean, I could still eat it, but I was like, no, this isn't.
Oh my gosh.
And it was such a anecdote because I had just come to from a meeting talking about food safety and expiration. Right.
And now Jonathan Gregory's in the hospital because of
Yeah,
botulism
right. So,
for 3 weeks. Oh
but
my
yeah,
God.
tons of waste and also the regulatory elements that are drivers, right? So FSMA Rule 204, I think your audience probably is aware of this, right? So the requirement to trace the movement, the batch lot, the origin of where you got this, this item when you receive items, when you transform them, and when you ship them, and be able to turn that information around very quickly. So that's an interesting driver. But I would say, with regards to RFID, that is one of many drivers. It's not only from a regulatory perspective. There's all that opportunity with regards to waste reduction, and then just to not to go on too long, but inventory management, just the kind of the blocking and tackling of inventory management. So lowering your safety stock, which lowers your working capital, reducing labor, specifically reducing really monotonous things that somebody, oh, I want to have to go count this thing, dealing with product pairings or dynamic demand creation. So being able to offer limited time offers when you see excess inventory, to be able to move that digitally, even quick serve restaurant digital signboards, things like that, the ability to do those. There's just a really exciting way when you connect the serialized data that you can receive in to action to respond to it.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at your slide here. Let's double click on just a little bit before we get into the solution. So you've got 5% of all food service is waste and 2% is retail waste. Okay, so it's 2024, Jonathan. It seems to me you ought to be able to pick strawberries in a field and get it all the way to a customer table without throwing it away. What are some of the major levers of why this food waste occurs in the supply chain?
The why of food waste, that's a big question, Mike. And
Okay.
a
But it's gonna lead into the solutions that you're coming up with about just knowing, for example, what case of strawberries should I put on the shelf? There's three of them here. Do I just
part.
grab the first one or
Right.
what? So I'm looking for what are some of the causes of waste that you guys put RFID standards in place to solve?
So think of 17 year old John Gregory here working at a quick serve restaurant or a restaurant, right? 17 year old John Gregory goes in at say 4:30 in the morning to go prep some material for the next stage to wash some lettuce or to do what have you, right? 17 year old John Gregory may not be the best, most reliable person to make sure that the right item is picked to be checked for, say, is it recalled or is this one has the newest or latest expiration date, if you will. And so really part of this is the human factor of managing the picking. And so if you can automate and provide mechanisms that mistake proof those processes, that's one big reason. In 17, John Gregory could be in a distribution center. And so potentially picking something that's going to expire, a week from now, when something next to it is going to expire, a day from now or what have you. So part of it is just the flow, and really it's the availability of data. Another point is that oftentimes we've had anecdotes where back-end systems data, if I generate data and I share it with a trade partner and it goes through multiple systems, guess what? Systems have vulnerabilities at times where the data can be inadvertently corrupted in some way, right? And what we found is that the barcode data is a shining example of great data quality, because the barcode is encoded at that point of manufacture. And it's really indelible. It's almost like a blockchain in a sense, in the sense that it's not widely distributed, but it's right there and it can't be changed. You can't like put another line in the barcode and change its value. And so the reliability of that is really substantial. And yet the barcode doesn't offer a non-line of sight. You have to say depalletize, say, for example, meat, right? There are many of examples where distribution centers receive a pallet of meat cases, and they have to depalletize simply to barcode scan each case, and then they repalletize it. So they did that just to get the data, where the RFID technology offers you non-line of sight, so allows you to capture that data and reduce that labor.
Got it. So talk to us a little bit about in the food versus apparel. Apparel is a serialized item, so it's the UPC. I call it the G10 and the serialization. There's additional data you can put in that provide attributes for food type products specifically. So talk to us a little bit about how GS1 is working standards that allow that to occur.
Yeah, Mike, the The interesting thing, I want to harken back to one of the first calls I was on when I joined GS1 US about 5 years ago, connected a major leading retailer, apparel retailer, with a major leading quick serve restaurant. So I won't name names, but right. And in that call, the retailer, because apparel was first, right? Apparel has deployed RFID in large part and has seen great success with it. And so it was interesting to hear these executives who really were kind of the glue of allowing these folks to talk and to hear them talk about, hey, here are all the benefits we see. And we could see the quick serve restaurant group getting excited, like, wow, well, we could really use this, right? Which begs the question, what's the difference between apparel and general merchandise and food, for example, or pharma, right? And that is the date, the velocity of the products are moving much faster, and you have to manage that date. So it's a different core business requirement. A sweater's not really expiring, but a case of tomatoes is, right? And so the challenge was the existing structures for the data structures were great for apparel, but they didn't really serve the needs of food service in that they didn't put the date value into the RFID tag. You say, well, I can just put that on a cloud, can't I? Well, you can, but when you look at how fractured, if that's the right word, how diverse the food industry is, the Forest 500 nonprofit group had looked at a burger and fries and packaging in Europe. And they evaluated, and they said that the content of that could have come from up to 75 different supply chains, right? So it's mind-blowing, right, to think of the number of places that food is sourced from. The shape of the food industry is different than apparel. Like, a retailer might know, okay, they might have their own distribution center, and they might have their own even factories, or they have a series of national brands, and it's a short list. Whereas in the food space, you have a whole lot of farms all over the globe focusing all that product into the distributors. And so really the distributors are kind of those key points. More so you're buying from a distributor than from a farm as a quick serve restaurant or what have you. So the diversity of the number of participants suggests that, putting the data in the cloud could be incredibly difficult to do, to be able to get to quickly. But if I can put this core data into the RFID tag itself, then that allows me to manage the product kind of on the edge, and I believe makes the solutions scalable.
Well, the other practical example is you get in environments that are very, very difficult to get any kind of connectivity from an internet standpoint. So I'm in a freezer cooler, which is a complete metal box. Good luck getting a Wi-Fi signal, right? So you have to have some of that offline on the devices itself, because you're never going to get to the cloud if you're in the back of a cooler trying to do a, which one of these should I mark down, right? So that's
Exactly.
a great point. Great point.
And along those lines, like a cooler example or a distribution center conveyor, right? Where we've seen this demonstrated where, hey, I can on the edge, that conveyor system can read the expiration date of the RFID tag and divert any item that's closer to expiry to be consumed more quickly, for example. And that logic doesn't require a call up to a cloud where, hey, where might the data be? Where's my data source? It's the data's right there in the moment and responding.
Well, maybe help unpack for us. For we'll go a little bit deeper in the tech because I think it's important. But give us the structure of what a normal apparel tag information would look like, right? Information that's actually in a tag versus the kind of information you'd have for that same thing for a food product. It's because I think there's some similarities, but there's some additional things that are available for food, right?
I'd be happy to do that, Mike. So the SG1096, not to geek out on you here, right? That is the encoding scheme, very widely used, very widely used. You go into a retailer, a big box store, just about anywhere that you're reading an RFID tag, there's a very, very high usage of this SG1096 encoding scheme. What does the encoding scheme encode? It encodes the G10, the global trade item number, which is the same data that is encoded in the UPC barcode or the EAN barcode if you're in Europe, right? So you have your G10 and your serial number, right? Now, what that allows is the G10 contains, just like your UPC barcode, and contains a GS1 company prefix, which means that you have a licensed company identifier. So you have a globally unique product described, and then you have a globally unique product instance. When you serialize that, you have this particular, you know, shirt, right, that I pick up has a unique identity. No other item in the world has that same serialized identity. Okay. Yep. So that works really well for apparel. But when we contrast that to what do I need for food?
So let me stop you for just a second. And going back to our original standards example, this particular format can be used ubiquitously across all the retailers, Walmart, Target, Macy's, whoever's doing RFID, they can read that same information. They don't have to have a different scheme for their retailer, right?
Exactly. And like I said at the beginning, like GS1 US or GS1 is all over the world, right? Right. So you don't have to be just in the US to read an SG1096. You're going to read it anywhere in the globe. So you're going to go over to Europe, you're going to go to the Far East, to Africa, and you're going to read the same data structure, which is really, really helpful. So it's this common language applied. Yeah.